You're listening to the NASM CPT Podcast with Rick Ritchie, winner of the ShareCare Emmy Award for Social Storytelling and the official podcast of the National Academy of Sports Medicine.
Hey, y'all, and welcome to the NASM CPT Podcast. My name is Rick Ritchie, and today we are going to continue on with what I think is the final iteration of our OPT model review that we've been doing for the past several weeks, and we've been doing two a week, so it's come to an end. So alas, here we are to talk about cardio. Before I get into the OPT model review with cardio, I'm going to ask a favor of you. If you get a chance, can you please click the link in the show notes for the survey? The survey is going to give feedback. It's going to take about 5 minutes, maybe, if you're a little slower reader like me, totaled 7 minutes, reader and writer. So maybe at most 7 minutes to do a podcast review. So that's going to give us feedback about your opinions of the show, not just this show, if you listen to any of the other shows on the NASM Podcast Network. And we have several now, I think five more shows. And if you could just give some feedback, that'd be great. You will be entered in to win a $100 gift card from Amazon. Don't do it for the gift card. Do it for the feedback, but also the gift card. So with that being said, thank you for doing that. Let's get into the topic at hand. Cardio, cardio, cardio. I know you don't want to talk about it. Don't want to talk about it. I see why not. Because we spent so much time for so many years where people only did cardio, and there wasn't a lot of talk, and there wasn't a lot of research that was going into resistance training. And now there's so much research, and there's so much talk about resistance training that we don't actually discuss cardio anymore. And people don't come to trainers to do cardio generally. They say, I do cardio on my own. When I come to you, I want to do resistance training, which I don't give them a choice a lot of times as to whether or not they don't get to do cardio. But with that said, if they can do that on their own, then what are they doing? And do we have something that we can provide for them if they do it on their own? Also, the pendulum may have swung too far the other direction towards resistance training, and I ain't mad at it. I like cardio when it's done with resistance. I think you can get your heart rate up with resistance training. You can do metabolic conditioning and anaerobic and VT2, all of that stuff with weights. But now we have a group of people that can't do steady state cardio, and you've got Instagram influencers with their shirts off saying, don't do cardio. Cardio doesn't work. It's weird, though. The research doesn't say that. The research doesn't say cardio doesn't work. Just the influencers on IG say that. Cardio does work. It's got numerous benefits. It's got fat loss benefits. It's got morbidity and mortality benefits. In fact, there's a lot more research that shows the benefits of cardiorespiratory training on your activities of daily living, your decreases of morbidity and mortality than we have with any of the other stuff. So let's just go with the premise that cardio is good for you. Let's go with that premise. And then also we can point out that there are some benefits of aerobic and anaerobic training, but a lot of times people jump over, they skip over the aerobic stuff and don't do a great job building their base. And it's kind of cool because your anaerobic stuff can help you aerobically, but your aerobic stuff also helps you aerobically. And to get that base and to get some of those benefits, I think we need to look into it. Well, there's a lot more to be discussed here. Think about this. We talk about the guidelines of cardiovascular and cardiorespiratory training. The guidelines are this: moderate intensity exercise. By the way, I talk about this ad nauseum over the past few years, I'm sure. So if you guys, I'm not spending all my time talking about this, so don't get mad at me. But moderate intensity exercise, 5 days a week or seven, at least 5 days a week, totaling a minimum of 150 minutes per week. By the way, this chart says 150 minutes per week. But if you go look at the standards when it comes to American Heart Association and stuff that comes out from the CDC and the Human Health Institute, since we've got 150 to 300 minutes, we generally just say 150 minutes because people are doing mostly 0 minutes. And so by saying 150 to 300 just makes it even less attainable for a lot of people to do. Also, that 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise, 5 to 7 days a week, totaling 150 minutes a week, don't expect, and your client shouldn't expect that you expect this, that they jump into doing that right away. If you're currently doing 0 minutes, and then I can get you to do 20 minutes, then you are 20 minutes farther along than you were. This is what we call progressive training. And so we'd always say progressive strength training. Let's build on, don't start with super heavy. We'll build weight. We start to get stronger and we progress. But there is progressive cardio training as well. So we don't jump into 150 minutes. Maybe we just start by getting people to do 20 minutes. Maybe we start by just having them do some cardio with us in their workouts and then adding in some cardio on their own. Then we can get them to be a little bit more hopeful in what they're able to accomplish. Build from the base. Don't jump into the deep end. We got to start with where they are. Vigorous intensity exercise, at least 3 times per week, totaling at least 75 minutes. And again, the HSS, CDC, American Heart Association will say 75 to 150 minutes, but we just kind of put the minimum in there so that people have a specific target. By the way, the more specific you are with what you want to target with somebody, the more likely they are to stick with that. So we're going to discuss that when it comes to intensity too. What intensity? So I want you to think about this. I take my kids out. I live right next to Riverside Park on the Upper West Side in Manhattan. And sometimes, especially my little guy is all in. Whenever I'm like, I'm going to go for a run, he throws it. Can I go? Ah, love that. Love that energy. My older kids, I didn't do that. I didn't run with them when they were younger. They have a zero desire to start now as teenagers. So my little guy, at least there's hope. But every once in a while, I make them all come out as a family. And they can't do the long duration ones. They can't do the moderate intensity, but maintain that for 20 minutes because their side stitches happen, things hurt, but they don't mind doing the anaerobic, the more vigorous stuff. So we might do something like fartlek training, which you'll see in your book, where we'll say, it's just speed play. It's pick a place. So we say, see that bench up there next to the dog park. Let's run as fast as we can until we get to that bench, and then we'll run. And then once we get there, everybody slows down. Any of the slower folks can catch up. And then we all walk very slowly, and we'll say, we'll keep walking until we get to that light post way up there. You see it next to the curb where the big dog is with the fur. That's the one. And then we'll run again, and we'll pick a point. Okay, we'll run from where that dog is at that post to the following bench. And then we just sprint it out and then we'll walk again. That's fartlek training, that's speed play, that's fun. You guys are out there doing Tabata training as if Tabata training is the answer to fitness and health. It's a great tool, it's a great modality. It's not the end all be all. It's probably not where people should be starting. There's no aerobic base that is built. We go straight to anaerobic and do 20 seconds on with a 10-second recovery. That's how you ensure that any new clients you have die immediately. It's so hard on them. And to throw somebody into a Tabata-style workout is very challenging. Even if you did 10 seconds on, 20 seconds off, that's challenging. Where are your clients? And how do you work with them on that? So there are a lot of different ways to measure intensity. You'll see in your textbook, there's a Tanaka formula, I believe it's called the Karvonen or the heart rate reserve formula, which is the one I used for years. And now I tend not to. So there's other ways. And these are all measures of intensity to find your max heart rate. And there's another way you could do it. It's not in the textbook. I'm just going to tell you a little secret. Here's a secret. If you are under the age of 40, these are kind of the rules here. Under the age of 40, you have zero contraindications. So no heart disease, high blood pressure, la, 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 and name the list of all of these things. And you want to know what your max heart rate is, wear a heart rate monitor and go for it. Get on a treadmill at an incline and go as fast as possible and for as long as possible. And when you think that you can't go any further, try to go a little bit further, and you'll notice that your heart rate's going to go up. It's going to go up. It's going to go up. And you want to build into it, but then jump up really fast. And then at some point, your heart rate doesn't go up any higher. That's your max heart rate. Great. Grab onto the rails, jump off on the side of the treadmill, catch your breath, take the treadmill speed down. And you can do that a couple of times just to ensure, I mean, maybe not that same day, but you will definitely go to your max heart rate if you've already jumped up that fast. You'll get there a lot faster. And that gives you a good idea. All right, so now I want to train at 65% of my max heart rate. You've got a very specific number here. Otherwise, you do the 220 minus your age as an estimate, the Tanaka formula where it's your age times 0.7, and you do 208 minus what you got from there, and that gives you an estimated max heart rate, or you can get your max heart rate. That just takes more work, and you wouldn't necessarily want to do that with new clients, so you may want to estimate what that is. Some of the other things we do, and you know, it's a lot easier now with heart rate, but man, back in the day, just doing a heart rate monitor and it was, you know, the strap around the chest, it just made it difficult to get everybody on the same page because not everybody had a heart rate monitor. And so one of the things that makes it a little bit easier for us as a trainer, where we're not measuring exacts, but we're giving estimations, is through something called the talk test. And the talk test it's allowing us to say, okay, if you are on, let's say a bike, you're on a bike and you're pedaling and I'm talking to you and you are actually just like me talking back, you are at a very low intensity. So on that intensity, you might use a scale of perceived exertion. What is your RPE, your rate of perceived exertion? The rate of perceived exertion, there are two different scales. There's a 6 to 20 scale called the Borg scale, and there's a 1 to 10 scale called the 1 to 10 scale. Why are they like that? Okay, let me explain it to you. Things get weird here. 6 to 20 scale, the Borg scale for rate of perceived exertion. 6 being sitting on the couch, doing nothing, eating tater chips. And 20 being all out sprint, trying to get away from a ravenous animal that is attacking you. You are going as fast as possible for as long as possible, which won't be very long because we can't maintain it that much. 6, nothing, 20, all out sprint. So the 6, nothing could probably relate to about a 60 heart rate, a resting heart rate of 60. Now, I know a lot of resting heart rates aren't as low as 60. A lot of maxes aren't as high as 20. But here, when you start actually measuring and getting heart rates and you say, I'm working at about a 13, then add a zero to the end of it, your heart rate's going to be at about 130. And so it's kind of a scale where you're trying to figure out how to measure it against a heart rate. This is the idea behind it, but most people aren't doing, it's just a 6 to 20 scale is a weird scale. So we are like, well, we're pretty used to a 1 to 10 scale. So a 1 to 10 scale can be a bit more manageable. 1 being doing nothing, 10 being all out sprint, then that is what most people are going to experience. And then you can create a combination of, okay, well, how am I going to measure myself and how hard I'm working? This is my rate of perceived exertion. It doesn't mean it is the exact exertion. It's the perception of the person working. I think I'm working at a 10 out of 10. They could probably run a little faster if there was a cougar behind them, but for the most part, it's a perception, and those perceptions change over time because we get better. We get more apt at doing certain things. And so we do expect that there will be some change. Now, we're going to talk about VT1, your ventilatory threshold 1. It is the first point where your clients can no longer speak comfortably during a continuous speech. You are having them talk while they're on their bike and they're pedaling. If they're sitting around doing like just a regular conversation, just as easy as you hear me speaking with you, they are pre-VT1. It is a very low intensity, definitely more fat utilization. VT2, when they can't speak in a regular, that kind of first point where, yeah, all of a sudden it just sounds like it's harder for them to get some words out. They can still talk and they can still manage a conversation. But there might be some clearing their throat, a little bit more swallowing, taking a moment to catch the breath, but they can still talk. It's kind of that equal mix of fat and carbohydrate usage. You can tell by the ventilatory threshold that it's a little bit harder, that there's a change in the breathing pattern. And that's because there's a little bit more, little less fat utilization, a little more carb utilization, and we're starting to try to get rid of that carbon dioxide that's building up. And then you can amplify that a little bit more. You can push a little bit harder until you get to the point of the ventilatory threshold two. The ventilatory threshold two, you really can't speak very well, to the point where it's funny, if you've got somebody in VT2 or the ventilatory threshold 2, not only can they not speak very well, but they can't listen very well. I know, I see trainers sometimes just talking and they talk and they talk. Well, you can talk and talk and talk to your client. If they're in VT2, they're not even hearing what you're saying. And they certainly don't want you to ask a question and expect them to have to speak back. You've got nearly all the substrate for the exercise being done coming from carbohydrate, very little from fat. You're never just fat. You're never just carbohydrate, but this is going to be mostly carbs. Don't get concerned about, I need to be more for fat loss. I need to be more fat utilization, because if that were the case, most of your fat, you're in a fat burning zone when you are at a 1 to 3 in intensity. At a 6, 7, 8 intensity on the Borg scale, on a 1 to 10 scale, 1, 2, or 3, it's very low intensity, but that's a fat burning zone. Don't let people tell you the fat burning zone is the best way to burn fat. It is just the substrate that's utilized. If you want to burn more calories, which is what you're looking to do, then we still need to have a strong aerobic base. We can still do the long, slow duration or steady state cardio and do that for 30 minutes, can do that for 60 minutes, go for a run, go for a bike ride, get on the rower and, you know, let's get 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters. But, you know, it won't be as intense. Now, you can do that for a long time, or you can do the VT2 for a very short amount of time and do some interval training. And you may burn the same amount of calories, but you might be done 30 minutes sooner. So it just depends. Remember, VT1, before VT1, you are really fat utilization, fatty acid oxidation, ventilatory threshold 1. It's the first point where your clients can no longer speak comfortably during continuous speech. A good mix of fat and carbs. VT2, you cannot speak very well. You're not having a conversation. You might not even be able to listen to somebody standing next to you, talking directly to you. Nearly all of that is coming from carbs. But let's do this. Let's get to the book. I like to take it to the book so that we get some ideas of what stage training looks like. Because we'll do something. I do something with my kids where there are these loops in the park. It's not quite as big as running a lap around a track, but it gives you the idea, and we take turns. So I'll get my kids out there and be like, all right, you do one loop, and then the next person gets up and they do it. And while the one person is recovering, the other person is running. And then I'll go, and if there's three of us, right, then there's one person running, two people sitting on the bench just having a conversation, and we're timing each other. And then there's a point where we say, okay, on this loop, there's a straightaway. Now we can switch it up and just sprint the straightaway and walk super slow around the rest of the track. And when we get back to the starting point, we do a sprint again and just walk really slow and recover around the track. There are all these different ways to do it. But in all of these, we're pushing ourselves, and every one of us are pushing ourselves to VT2. Sometimes it's sprinting. Sometimes it is a sprint until you run out of gas, but it's a long enough run where you just kind of slow down a little bit. These are all great forms of training. I want you to take your attention, if you've got your textbook, take it to page 500. Page 500, where it says intro to stage training. And then there's a table, 1510, that talks about the training zones. Zone 1, zone 2, zone 3, and zone 4. Zone 1 is below VT1. We talked about that. It's really kind of easy on a RPE scale. On that 1 to 10 scale, it's like a 3 or a 4. All right. So I would even say like a 1, but a 1 is you're not doing anything. 2 is very, very little. 3 and 4 is still below VT1 because you're still able to talk fine. That might be a 12 or 13 on the 6 to 20 scale. It's light exercise. You might be starting to sweat a little bit, but you can carry on a conversation effortlessly. Zone 2, VT1 to midpoint. So that's going to be a 5 to 6 on that 1 to 10 scale. It's a 5 to 6. That's your midpoint. It is a 14 to 15 on the 6 to 20 scale. It says challenging to hard, noticeably sweating, using larger volumes of breath, continual talking is becoming challenging. All right, that's zone 2. Zone 3, kind of the midpoint pushing to VT2. And that's going to be on a 1 to 10 scale. It's a 7 to 8. On the 6 to 20, the Borg scale, that is a 16 to 17, vigorous to very hard, profuse sweating, vigorous breathing, and the ability to talk is limited to short phrases, which is, I can't talk right now. So zone 3. Now, zone 4, the VT2 and above, that is a 9 to 10 on a 1 to 10 scale. On the Borg scale, the 6 to 20 scale, that's an 18 to 20. Very hard to max effort. Breathing as hard as possible. Speaking is impossible or limited to grunts or single words. Give me a second. That's the kind of stage training. And then you look at the zones. There are different kind of figures that you can look at here. There's a figure on page 501 where it talks about zone 1 training is literally a 5 to 10 minute warm-up in zone 1 and then a 30 minute workout in zone 1. So you're not even pushing into zone 2. That is a steady state cardio where you are building up a very, very low aerobic base, but still building up your base. And your cool down can be 5 to 10 minutes as well. But your cardio in that, it's gonna be 30 minutes in zone 1. Zone 1 is below VT1. That is a 3 to 4 on that 1 to 10 scale. It's light. You're sweating, but you can still carry on a conversation. That's going with a run with a friend. And you guys are still chatting about the goings-ons of the day and what's going on with the kids and how school's going and all of that kind of stuff. It's not that hard, but it's still a good workout. Stage 2 on page 502, there's an example where you get some stage 2 workouts where you get a warm-up and then you kind of do these intervals where you're jumping up and you say, for 1 minute, we're going to run at this phase. And then for 3 minutes, it's our cool down. But at the 3 minutes, not a cool down, it is the stage 1 or that zone 1, very, very light. Do that for 3 minutes and then jump up to more challenging, but still being in zone 2. You can also do long workouts in zone 2 because in zone 2, you can maintain a steady state cardio in zone 2. So do a warm up in zone 1. Jump up to say, this is where my runs tend to be, because basically me running at all is very challenging. So every bit of my cardio when I go out for a run is zone 2 cardio. I don't think I can run slow enough to be in zone 1. So my zone 2 is that chart on 5 or the figure in 503, where you, for a few minutes, you do a warm up a little bit slower, maybe pick it up. and for 30 minutes, maintaining zone two cardio. Stage three, you can go kind of zone one for your warm-up, zone two, a little bit more warm-up, zone three. That's a push. And you can do that for a minute or so, but then take it down back to zone two for a minute or two, back to zone three for a minute, back to zone one for a minute, back to zone three for a minute, and then do your cool down. It doesn't have to last as long. It's certainly going to be a shorter workout, but it's a challenging workout. And then your stage four, where you can't get to zone four and maintain that for 1 minute. So what you do is you jump up and you sprint it out maybe for 10 seconds and then do a level one cool down, you know, like not cool down, but recovery. So recover for about 3 minutes and then blast it again. So do another 10 second blast and then recover for 3 minutes. That's the example where I was doing the workout with the kids where we'd run the straightaway. And we'd get that as fast as we can. We could probably get that in about 10 seconds. Maybe it takes a little bit longer than 10 seconds. But then we walk the rest of the way around the track. We recover and we do it super slow. And then we pick it up again. So these are examples of cardio. This is what we're looking at when it comes to our cardiorespiratory training in the OPT model. There's not just one way to do it. There are different zones of training. There are the ventilatory threshold, VT1, VT2, the sub-VT1. There's a lot of different ways to do it. There's percentage of the Tanaka formula, percentage of the carbonin formula. There are a lot of options out there. But the VT1, VT2, the rate of perceived exertion, those are easier because it is a perception. It is not exact. It is not getting your max heart rate and doing a percentage of max heart rate the same way you would do a lift. This is my lift, and this is a percentage of that lift. Sometimes you just say, we're going to do 10 repetitions, 10 to 12 repetition range. That's kind of like the RPE. I'm going to do a range of what I perceive, and I'm going to do it for this amount of time. These are all elegant ways for trainers to work with clients, but to be specific with clients and say, I want you to go for a run. I want you to do 1 minute on and 3 minutes a little bit easier, and then give them something that they can practice, not just get on the bike, get on the treadmill, get on the stairmill and go, even though that is something that you can program for them and have them do on their own. We want to give some variety for them to adhere to as well and to do those intervals. But my gosh, don't let it always be Tabata. Tabata's great, but it's not the only thing that's out there. Okay? Thanks for listening. Like, subscribe, share with your fitness friends and family. You got questions for me? Hit me up. Let me know. You can find me on Instagram and Threads at dr.rickritchie or email me rick.ritchie@nasm.org. Keep inspiring people to fitness. Thanks for listening. This has been the NASM CPT Podcast.